Yes?
Is a peace testimony necessary for all friends now?
That's a difficult question. Is anything necessary for all friends now? Are they regimented? No, I think not.
You're not regimented, I know, but would there be pressure? Would this be felt to be amiss?
It would depend a good deal on the local meeting. You mean to the individual meeting? Yeah. Membership in the local meeting, the moral and spiritual care for the members of the meeting belong in the meeting, and the meetings would differ about that. Obviously, in wartime, it's a more difficult thing than in peacetime. There are materials available. I'm not sure how much I should say about it later. You're asking about the present. I say this offhand, there is not a single instance of a friends meeting officially renouncing this doctrine. But they haven't always been equally strict on men who engaged in war. And as I suggested last time, in the case of the Civil War, it was an awfully difficult thing because it was apparently a war in the North, at least, for the putting down of slavery. And there, here you have two evils. Now, this is a choice of evils. Well, these were some of the reasons, I think, why friends fortified what came to them, I believe, not out of books or out of history, but out of inner judgment. They just didn't go. The more they thought about, the more unsuitable it seemed, and individuals came, as I said earlier about Quakerism. Quakerism was the coalescing of people who independently had arrived at similar positions in this as in other matters. Now, there was no wholesale testing of this, like the question that you just now asked me, in the earlier days. It didn't arise all the time. In England, for instance, which is where the early history of Quakerism lies, there was no such thing as conscription until 1916. That meant that the pressure, it's under pressure. Of course, there were, a Quaker might have volunteered at any time in history, but the issue comes up in our thought, particularly in the matter of conscription. Of course, individuals like Fox were invited to join the army, or even urged to join the army, and in some cases were individually coerced. That was especially true in the Navy, where the naval ships needed to be manned. Some of the seamen deserted, and they had to send the ship out to sea, and they come into a harbor, and there'd be a ship lying there, and a lot of merchant ships with Quaker sailors on them. They'd just go and grab them. And individual Quakers got caught that way. How they behaved under those circumstances, there's some rather interesting stories. Men that were, quite early, this was put on board ships of war and expected to engage in military service on the ships. Here they are, the ship couldn't get ashore. They would be caught, and they were ordered to man a gun. Here's a fellow named Thomas Lurdy. He was on such a ship, and an engagement was coming near, and he was ordered to man a gun. And he was all stripped for action and loading this cannon. And then he said, the thought came to me, what if I should kill a man? And he quit, he dressed, he just sat still and did nothing. Captain came around, mad as could be, and he had a long and interesting experience working out privately. He didn't know that the Quakers didn't engage in war. He found that out later. He found afterwards some other Quakers on the ship, and they agreed on this. And at one time, a little later, when he was also on a merchant ship, and the merchant ship was captured by some Turkish pirates, And he arranged to put these pirates on their own coast shore in North Africa. These are, I said Turkish, but they were Barbary Coast, without the use of any violence. And having freed the ship he was on from these pirates by taking them off in a little boat and putting them on the shore, came back to England. And when he got into the harbor of London, the word had come that this ship had had an extraordinary experience of freeing itself from the pirates without any taking of life. And the king came down and saw the ship came in with Thomas Lurting on it. And the king said to Thomas Lurting, why didn't you bring them here as captives? Thomas Lurting said, I thought they'd be better off in their own country. Which made the king even smile. Now, over against England in this period, I'm talking mostly of the 17th century now, situation in America was a little different. For one thing, in the West India colonies, particularly, where there were friends in half a dozen of them, they were in constant danger of invasion by both pirates and by either the French or the Spanish, depending on who England was at war against at the time. And these people would, therefore on the islands, where the Quakers with the other white settlers and with all the slaves had the problem, and the local island government would very often make a rule requiring every man to do some military duty. The military duty would consist in appearing once a month at a militia ground and going through maneuvers. Or it would consist of taking your turn at a watch station where they were looking out to see whether there was in the offing an enemy ship off the harbor or off the coast. And these duties were allotted to all citizens. And the Quakers were citizens and either had to serve themselves or provide a substitute. They could send one of their slaves to do this, or they could hire a substitute, a white substitute, to do it for them. And this produced, therefore, something a good deal like conscription. Compulsory training, if you like, in the militia grounds, or watching, guard duty. Not very often, didn't very often come to actual combat. Not too many cases where friends in America were involved in that. But that was true there. It was true in a great many of the other of the mainland colonies. The militia system existed and was often compulsory. So that these demands were made of them, which they could not discharge. At least they weren't quite sure whether they could or not. Is there any harm in training for military service if you make up your mind that when the war comes you won't do it? They thought it was, many of them. Matter of fact, in modern times, the Quakers were first tested by a compulsory military drill for boys in New Zealand in 1912. For 50 years, there hadn't been any problem for Quakers of actual pressure to do anything military. And the boys, 12 and 14-year-old boys, Quaker boys, among others, were involved. Rather tender age for which for modern Quakers to have to face the issue which older Quakers later faced with the coming of two world wars afterwards. Well, very interesting to see the way the Quakers operated under these pressures in the colonies. They also were on guard against, of course, slave uprisings, quite as much as from off the sea. And in the island of Jamaica, the slaves could concentrate in the middle parts of the island, and the first thing you know, they come down on the towns, on the coast, or the ships from the sea would require this. Well, these are the forms in which the testimony was first met, really, in the Quaker of these colonies. Now, of course, some colonies were Quaker, as you know. Rhode Island, for many years, was Quaker. And of course, ultimately, Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and to some extent, North Carolina and Delaware. And therefore, the Quakers in some of these colonies, whether they were owned the colony or whether they were influential, were able to secure exemption from military service on conscientious grounds. I think the earliest law in America is 1673, perhaps up in Connecticut or Rhode Island. And of course, the Quaker governors of Rhode Island, the Quaker legislature of Rhode Island, and even more Quaker legislature of Pennsylvania and New Jersey, would see to it that anybody, not only a Quaker, but anybody who had conscientious scruples, would not be subject to laws. These are laws for militia service, for providing equipment for military service, ammunition and arms and so on. And in the case of these islands down in the, of building forts and of standing watch, taking their turns, just standing on the high land and looking out. What's wrong about that? Well, this raised some problems. When they built a fort, of course, the Quakers wouldn't build a fort, but also they dug water holes to store water inside the fort. Well, now that would maintain life, wouldn't it? Wouldn't take anybody's life. And a Quaker might well say to himself, of course I can dig that water hole, but I won't do a thing to build a fort. So these problems faced them. And then even the Quaker colonies were under pressure from neighboring colonies and from the government. After all the colonies were part of the British Empire. The British Empire was involved in wars in this continent as part of the war on the other continent. When England was at war with France, then the French dependencies in America would raise armies against the English dependencies, and the Quaker colonies were expected to send troops, supplies, or at least money to carry on the war on behalf of the Quaker colonies. Well, this is the kind of problem that we'll go on with next time, and you'll see I haven't quite reached the end of it yet, but this gives us a start. Some of you want books. Take a quiz. There are some books here. The attorney books. The first question, very brief. With regard to John Woolman, in the chapters you read, chapters 1 to 4. How far north and how far south? I think I heard something like that in the Fox. How far north and how far south did Woolman's journeys take him on the American continent in this period of his life? From his New Jersey home, that's where he lived, you know.